You're tuned into the Awakening Zone Radio Network, your news and information source for empowered spiritual awakening.
Hello, this is Karen Elkins, and today we have a special guest, the author and award-winning bestseller, Diane Collins, and her book, Do You Think Quantum? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World. Her entire life has been devoted to the question, how do we create the results we truly desire? With 6,000 years of wisdom available at the touch of our smartphones, how is it we are still not living it? She has studied everything from physics to metaphysics. She has made a new life. She had some new life altering discoveries that led her to create the Quantum Think Model, a system of thinking comprised of principles, practices that make it quick and easy for anyone to live the wisdom, science, and spirituality in a modern, practical life. Today, we are going to attempt, we'll see how far we get, the 21 principles of quantum think, and we'll leap ourselves into a new world paradigm and not the old world paradigm. So, Diane, thank you for joining us today.
It is my pleasure, Karen. I'm so excited to do this. I've never done this on the air before. I try to do all 21 principles. But I think it's good, you know, to activate this in our awareness. And quantum think, I should say, is a system of thinking. So it's holographic and holistic. So the whole of it is contained in every smaller aspect of itself and every one of the 21 distinctions. So whatever it is, I think it's just holding the intent that all of us, and I include, you know, you and me and everyone listening, either live or in replay, that we bring a new awareness to ourselves during this time together in such a way that we have an expansion, a shift, you know, something that lifts us for the better.
Well, here's what I think is interesting. When you look at the world, and I always think of it in some ways as all these parallel realities happening, and what's happening with so many different people thinking so many different ways, I like the way there's one part of your book that just talks, it's not either or, it's both and. So let's start with, we'll start with the first principle. We'll get right into it, and we'll see how we do. And I think what I'll do, Diane, is just touch on the topic heads and certain concepts are behind it, and then we can talk about it. So it's holistic and holographic. And so we're talking here about the idea of the theory of everything and the theory of systems thinking. So let's go from there.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, these principles, I just want to give a little bit of context for it, and then
okay.
This fits in perfectly to what I wanted to say, because of the time that we're in right now, when you look at what I consider to be the two very important, let's say, focuses for our awareness and our attention right now as people who are, you know, intentionally living a conscious life, and I know your listeners do and are. And, you know, one of them is to see that what my great revelation was, I call it, that we think everything in the universe is a system. It's a universe of whole systems interpenetrating one another. And it's, you know, cycles upon cycles, systems upon systems. Nothing, we have distinctions, but no actual separation. So when you look at the very fundamental principle, holistic and holographic, holistic is not just an alternative healing method. It's how the universe works, that everything affects everything else, and holographic means the whole of it is contained in every other aspect. So even knowing this, okay, I want to first of all say the two aspects that I feel are important today. One is to relate to our thinking in a new way as a whole system. This is where we can make a literal quantum leap in consciousness. And this is what I discovered, because we are in a quantum age where we have all this quantum knowledge, where we have an expanded worldview through science, where we know that the science is now verifying what the universal wisdom is, and that's one of them, that we live in these fields, you know, invisible fields. Yet, as you know, as a person who has created forward-thinking education, We're in a quantum age, yet our thinking as a system is still very much conditioned by what I lovingly call the old world view. This gets the both end. So we're in a quantum age, and we're conditioned in our entire developed society of humanity at this point in life, in the stage of evolution, by the industrial machine, universe as machine, only physical is real worldview. So what quantum think does, as we go into this, and we'll quicken the pace, of course, that as we go into it, this is what we're doing right now. I just, you know, I thought, well, how do we live the wisdom? How do we go from just knowing it conceptually, being able to repeat it and say, you know, oh, I've heard that, you know, we're all the know-it-all types, that how do we actually integrate it? And there are two ways that that happens. One is to actually live your thinking as a system. And this is one of the applications of holistic and holographic. And the second thing is what I call a new world view of learning, the art of distinguishing, is that where we integrate is in our present moment experience. So as we bring these distinctions into our awareness right now with this intent, it integrates, and that is the purpose of my book, Do You Quantum Think, is to connect to your own awareness as you read. So even if you've heard of things before, even if you've been studying, and I've had a lot of people write to me that I've been studying quantum mechanics and new consciousness and new thought for, you know, 35 years. I get a lot of these letters. And when I read your book, I finally woke up. So, you know, it's whenever or whatever hits you in the moment where you connect. But this is what it's about. So getting back, the two things, I like to do this because my husband, who's my partner, Alan Collins, in all things in life and business, always says, complete my thought, you know, that, speaking of holistic and holographic, that the second thing is to what I call, Karen, put an end to the great divide in our culture. So what I call, again, lovingly, the consciousness crowd, you know, who is us, and then the more we think of, you know, the liberals and the conservatives, you know, whether it's a racial divide, a gender divide, a cultural divide, a religious divide, is that when you look at what does it mean to quantum think, what does it mean to think from these quantum principles, well, then this distinction, holistic and holographic, means that we see it as one, that unity, you know, we are one, is not just a platitude, so that what we focus on expands. What we hold in our awareness in any given moment, we generate that resonance when we do that habitually. So it's a question of catching ourselves in that separation thinking, you know, the 1% and the 99%. And when we start thinking from the whole of humanity, for the whole of humanity, it's not that it's a homogenized, you know, stew. It's that we can see how do we use the gifts and the values of the differences. How do we use both and thinking to really address going to the great shift? Being able to not just talk about it, but to actually resolve our problems that the old thinking, you know, in the Einstein, I call the modern day mantra, the problems we have cannot be solved with the same level of thinking. Well, when we take this leap in thinking and we start looking and living from the expanded worldview as a whole system, this creates the shift. And this is what is holistic and holographic. And just one other thing to put it on a personal level, that I'll go shorter on the others, but I wanted to use that principle to have us all really get in touch with and begin to connect to the that it's a universe of whole systems, and that it behooves us to think that way if we want to really be in our most, you know, in our highest state, which we all do. And so there, for each of the distinctions, I call them the principles, the 21 principles, and it, there is a practice for the mind and awareness. So as we go through them, I'll touch on some of those. And it practice for holistic and holographic, one of them is, and the idea is, you know, you experience this. It has to do with, well, let me just say the result of it is to experience your life as whole and sound, because wholeness really means integrity. And integrity means there's a soundness to it, so there's no fragmentation. There are no loose ends in your energy field. And there is a practice in the book that helps us all to do that, or to live in that state of being complete, of experiencing yourself as, you know, an integrated whole moment by moment, regardless of what's going on in your life, because we all are in this shift, right, where there's it's chaos around us. And so that's that. I just wanted to point that out, that everything becomes a personalized practice.
Okay.
So that's holistic that and holographic.
Yeah, there's a visual that comes to mind that I think synthesizes it, and it's this way. I think of life in a sense as like a kaleidoscope. And since we know that basically three things are the beginning formula for life, life is basically birthed out of triangles, and these triangles create fractals, and these fractals create an arrangement and a rearrangement in the fractal field at any point in time, however we give it literally spin. And it's how we color our world. So when I think of this holistic thinking, we're systems within systems, you have a part in the book where you're also talking about the body and the earth are of the same proportion. In many ways, I mean, with water, with particles, light. And so when we think of ourselves oftentimes as separate, we are not. And I've had the privilege of actually seeing what an atom looks like, and it's interconnected webs like a web of a spider web. So we all are interconnected and yet interdependent. So I'm going to let you, but I just wanted to put the visual in, because I think if people could actually see this kaleidoscope moving around as a crystalline ocean, we swim around in creating and recreating. I think that creates a visual for all the things that we're gonna keep going on to. So if we've done holy and holy holographic and holistic, then we're gonna go to the observer created reality.
Right, and that's the core distinction. But just to address what you were saying about the visual, and this is so important because, and I, as you know, address those in later chapters in the resonance chapter and energy and flux. Because, you know, and it's said that this has to do with the old worldview conditioning. Because when the science declared only matter is real, and so we're not learning in school yet. I like to say yet. We're changing it now, right? You and me and everyone listening. That we're not learning about this fractal nature in the sense that it also connects to us. And, you know, the spiritual masters have said, if you focus, if you meditate on a word, you know, in long enough, that it will become, you'll see it in your mind's eye as an object. And we know that everything starts, that it is a geometrically based universe, and it's coordinates, and it's like what you say, it's all these different ways of connecting and these mathematical ratios. And even I'm a student of astrology, and so that whole system, the planetary system that astrology is based on, that it also has to do with energies and how they connect to one another. So what I like to do is get it, you know, what my work is about, Karen, is like, well, how to, but in the everyday, you know, we love this because to us it's titillating, you know, to our intellect, and we love it, and it does really touch us in a soulful way as well, because this is who we are at the core of our being. And so when we hear these things or we read it, and you're exquisite, magazine, Science to Sage, which I'm so honored to be a part of in this edition of The Matrix. But it's what you're talking about. It's like when you start to realize, you know, people say, oh, thought creates reality. Well, how does it do that? That was my question, you know, when I was 10 years old. Okay, thought creates reality, really? And then you realize that these underlying principles are working all the time, that we haven't learned it in the physical-based, you know, educational system, because they're not talking about what's in the field. How does the matrix of the field work? How does it work in us? How can we master these faculties of mind? So what aspect of my life's mission is to have this be ordinary, have it be like, you know, we wake up and we're dealing with what's in our mind. We're dealing with, you know, what's going through our mind, the thoughts that we have, the habits of emotions that we have. We're dealing with our relationships, with what we want to accomplish, with how are we feeling in our nature of our well-being. And so this is where the really important connection is to make this, you know, to have this knowledge, this ancient and now modern knowledge, become integrated in us in a very ordinary, everyday way of practical living. And why? For the purpose of mastering a joyful life. Okay. Now,
okay,
you
said
that,
there's a thought that comes to mind, because I just want to interrupt, because I'm going to flip around maybe, because we're going to go to Chapter 7, and you're going to talk about the concept, I'm going to call it of the taboos of what you're not supposed to talk about in science, and you mentioned astrology. But that all goes back into understanding the way the universe is constructed, and it's in the Bible, it's in every ancient tradition, which talks about the Word. And we don't think of ourselves living in a sea of sound. But even the planets have a song, and you can go to NASA and hear any one of the planets' songs. And I think Jupiter has like a Gregorian chant. One has the sound of an om. And so we're really literally dancing around these crystalline oceans, which all have a fractality, which all have their geometry, which shapes who we are. And I think what's really interesting is when people understand that we live in a crystalline structure, that even when you get your astrology chart, you really, it even looks like, if you look at it, it looks like your crystalline pattern and what you're supposed to unfold in a lifetime.
Absolutely. And I look at that too, right? The geometric, the lines, how they're going. But I want to go back to observer-created reality, because this is the principle, the distinction number two, but it is the core. It's what you're talking about. It's all interconnected, so we can go back and forth, right? Like things in the quantum world go back and forth through time. But the observer, what's called the observer effect, which many people may be familiar with that terminology in science, and what I call in the quantum thing system, observer-created reality, and I have a little subtitle because I like to make it fun for every distinction. Basically, the essence of it is what you bring is what you get. What we hold in consciousness, and this comes from, you know, the experimentation and the Heisenberg principle, where trying to measure the velocity and the location of a particle of energy at the same time and found he couldn't do it. Well, of course, logically, if you just think, how could, you know, you can't lock something down in a universe that's characterized by energy and flux. But then the greater, you know, what I call the greater observation is that the instrument of observation was shaping what was being observed. So I look at it again, applying it. Quantum think is not about science. It's about how these discoveries of science, how we can shape our thinking. So if you think what we bring is what we get, because we exist in fields, in relational fields. So what is the instrument of observation for us as people? And what we hold in observation are our assumptions, beliefs, ideas, notions about what we think about, you know, our life, our who we are, the next meeting with a client we're going into. And this is how it becomes useful, Karen, because when you realize that a lot of what we are holding in our habitual way of thinking, I call it just a vestige of the industrial age worldview, which was gave rise to machines, right? So we could say, I like to say it kindly, in many ways, we became mechanical too. So we don't have to, when you're quantum thinking, go into analysis of, you know, what happened to me when I was 2 years old and that created this or when another lifetime. It's just catch what I call the least action pathway, the automatic way the thought, energy, or emotion goes, simply because it's been that route before. It does make a neural connection, but we can interrupt those. Now, we know there are many, you know, different, as you say, sound and different ways of interrupting, but just in the course of everyday, moment-to-moment living. You catch yourself in that automatic thought. You can make a distinction between a thought you originate or initiate and a thought that's just, I call it, visiting from the invisible mind field that we're always in. So observe a creative reality. What you bring is what you get. If you find that you're bringing what you know, a, quote, negative conclusion or some disparaging thought about yourself or others or a situation, that you are influencing that resonance that you were talking about. You're influencing the field. You're influencing the resonance. So what do? You notice it. You interrupt it. This is all an instantaneous quantum leap style. And you what? You displace it with a new creation. What is the dynamic of creation that we've been divinely bestowed with at birth? The power of intent. And I use intent in a shamanic sense. I make a distinction between intent and intention. Intention being a future goal, some, you know, it also has a path of energy. But if we use intent in the shamanic sense, it transcends the boundaries of space-time and matter, I might add. And it, what does it do? We have our focused awareness on a statement that is articulated in the present tense that activates the energy intelligent field that we call our personal resonance. And you begin to condition a new field. This can happen so quick in the relational field, not as quick in the more dense, slower physical. And this is where people get hung up. Oh, I created an intent, but it didn't work. Well, because everything starts in that consciousness, spiritual, you know, spirit, I should say, consciousness, spirit, energetic, you know, eventually giving, creating resonance and eventually giving rise to form. But in the relational realm, we can shift the result immediately. And this is what, why the observer-created reality is so important, because there's no separation, as the ancient wisdom says. There, the world exists on the screen of your own consciousness, and we have the opportunity in every moment to shift what we habitually hold in consciousness, and at least in the very moment. And that's why every moment you have an opportunity to generate a transformation in your state.
Well, I think you just did number three, which was infinite possibilities.
I did.
And I
told you
that. And then I think this takes us directly into number four, which is success to mastery.
I know, and I know you wanted to jump to seven, which we can.
No, well, we touched seven. I just, because you mentioned that.
Okay,
I
we'll catch
to make sure
seven.
But there was a visual part. So even we can skip seven. We're now on four.
Okay, good. I'll take 30 seconds just to recap, you know, infinite possibility. That infinite possibility means, and, you know, in science they call superposition, or, you know, it's a reality is a probability field waiting to happen, possibility field waiting to happen, and we narrow the probability wave field with the creation of our specific intent. Now, the thing about this is that infinite possibility. It's like, you know, when Alan, my partner and husband, and I work with clients, and we do work in major corporations with senior executives, applying quantum thinking, you know, to business results, to all areas, because it always affects the whole life. But how do we, you know what happens, having been in that realm yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you go into a meeting and someone brings up a novel or a great idea, and then everyone goes, oh, no, we tried that last time. It didn't work. Oh, no. You know, this is the everyday thing that I'm talking about. And no matter how intelligent a person is, how much experience they have in a particular profession or expertise, it doesn't matter because we still, awareness and intelligence are two entirely different things. So awakening thinking is what we're talking about. And so with infinite possibility, when you have these things as a distinction, which means that it's brought into your awareness in such a way with this intent that it alters your relationship to it. So infinite possibility, and that's where I bring up least action pathway, because I'm saying, well, what's in the way?
Yeah.
Sorry?
I thought that was critical in the book.
Yeah, it is. And I purposely didn't make it one of the 21 distinctions. But everyone, you know, focuses on it because what's in the way of us thinking from infinite possibility? And it comes up, you know, this is the either-or, that either-or mechanism of the industrial age worldview. They wanted to predict and control nature. If we could figure out how this big machine works and what the constituent parts are and how they work together in this linked cause and effect, push on that object and that moves, then we can predict and control nature. So if you think, how did this adapt onto our thinking? Well, everything has to be either this way or that way. And this mechanism in our thinking, Karen, is running in so many different ways. Of course, in the physical, you know, we look separate, we look different, but we know we're not. But we're still, oh, you know, you're black, I'm white, you're this, you're that, I'm, you know, conservative, liberal, all the rest. So when you go back to this idea of, oh, a least action pathway. All we have to do is interrupt that either-or mechanicality, that automaticity of the way that our thoughts go when something novel comes up. And why is that important? Because today we're living in a much, you know, obviously different environment of accelerated pace of change and evolution, increasing complexity and choice, and everyday uncertainty as our systems and structures are undergoing a major rampant transformation. That is astrological. We're in a 16-year period of that, astrologically speaking. So when you look at this is going on the macro scale of humanity, and it's also affecting us on the micro scale of our lives personally, then we need to be able to literally think from infinite possibility. Think of, you know, well, if I want to live my purpose and I feel that it's not happening in this job, or, you know, do I have to change jobs, or, you know, these are the real things that people talk about and think about and have to deal with, then maybe, you know, it becomes a both and. Wait a minute. I can have this job. I can integrate who I am in my, you know, consistently elevating awareness, right? And bring that kind of presence into my job, into my company, into my corporation, and both and at the same time, I can, you know, be a healer using light and sound. I mean, you know, you can. So when we start to think from infinite possibility, I used a big example, but it's come in little ways, like, how do we have this work for everyone? That's one of the from a later distinction. But anyway, so infinite possibility is to catch your least action pathways. And there are least action pathways of gender, relationships develop them, family least action pathways, country least action pathways, and you become, what happens is you start to, you're not attached because you just see it as, oh, that's a vestige of old worldview thinking. You don't give it any meaning. You don't start making yourself wrong for having a least action pathway. It's just you notice it because in the noticing of what's automatic is the moment of awakened awareness. Only in a moment of awakened awareness do we actually have choice. So that's infinite possibility.
Here's one thing I thought was interesting in the book. When I least action pathway, I think it would be great if you gave an example so people understood. But then in that part of the book that I liked, it's like, and what's the right question to what it is
right.
that you want to resolve. I think those were two key points for me. So why don't you give one, at least like in a family situation, I think that was one that stuck out in the book for me, where you're withholding, I think that was the word.
Withholding?
Love. Yeah, it was like, you know,
oh, yeah, I know what
you're
talking about.
Don't remember that part?
It's like
yeah.
this. I'll tell you, I have to interrupt this one all the time with my own mother and me in our relationship because let's say, you know, my mother is a beautiful 91 years old. She looks like she's 70 and acts like she's, you know, 20. But anyway, she's lovely. And so when I see, but she does have, she is 91, so she's like, she wants this, she wants that. And so my least action pathway, I'm admitting this, is to say, you know, well, to myself, I don't want to. Whatever it is, not what, you know, anything she asks me. But she'll ask me something, and I feel my least action pathway would be, you know, I'm really busy, and that's an interference, and now you're adding to my to-do list. So that's like an emotional least action pathway. It's instantaneous. I don't choose that thought or that emotion. The thought gives, you know, we have our thoughts, we ascribe meaning to our thoughts, and that's what gives rise to the emotional response. It's all like a gestalt. It's very quick. But that would be an example. So I have to catch myself in that and say, wait a minute, this is my mother. I love her. You know, she's 91. Of course I want to help her, you know, and of course I'm going to do that for her. And that is an example in a family. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and then the thing was, you said, then ask the question. What is the question that's really beckoning to be answered at the moment?
Right.
It's like
now,
asking a different question.
Mm-hmm. To be
I did read the book.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
I love when people, you know, the book is meant to be used over and over. So people, a lot of people read it through, especially radio show hosts. They're like, I've got to read the book. I said, okay, well, it's meant to be read, you know, slowly, one chapter at a time. But it's in two parts. Part one, wake up. Why should we quantum think? Because I'm a maverick, and I like to make it a little bit humorous in that part. And talk about mind, wisdom, mastery, what is it all about, light, stories, the stories we've lived with forever, the religious stories. And then go to part two. Wait a minute. Oh, here, you can live the wisdom. It's not just a good idea. So that's what we're talking about right now. Now, the being in the right question is another way of creating intent. The question that we're in shapes the result, shapes how our actions will be borne out. The question that we're in. So even if we're not, you know, articulating the question, and this is in the distinction called transformation as distinct from change. And this is a very, very important distinction because we want to change something about our life. And the very thing that we don't want anymore, we have all our attention on. Now, the obvious things are, you know, when you want to have more money or you want to lose weight, you have all your attention on being fat, you know. And so these kinds of things, this does require, you know, an intent for mastery of the mind. But when you're, what you're talking about is being in the right question. So I use in the book, Do You Quantum Think, as an overall, all-encompassing question. How can we have this work for everyone? And just to complete on the transformation as distinct from change, what the idea of it is, the very thing that you don't want, you are holding in place. This refers back to observer-creative reality, or said in simple terms, what we hold in mind, meaning not the left brain cognitive. When I say mind, I mean the individualized form of consciousness of the all-pervasive, infinite all that is, that comes through us as our individual mind, or what we hold in awareness, what we're focused on. In the field, right, in that fractal geometric field, you know, what are the coordinates? Because we're actually locking on, I think of it as locking on to coordinates. And so what we, you know, E equals MC squared. What we put our attention on, we energize. What we energize, we add mass to. So we tend to concretize it that way. The good part of this all is, from a quantum world view, the fundamental principle, there are no absolutes other than what I like to say, if you think of as divine or anything related to that, eternal. For ordinary, everyday life, it's in the universe of energy and flux informed by intelligence. Nothing is absolute. That's the great news. Everything is malleable and changeable. So now, we have to learn these, what I call the five natural faculties of mind, become adept with them. The faculties of intent, intuition, subtle energy, how to connect into it and use it, transform it, transmute it. Resonance, how do we generate conscious resonant fields consciously, and meditation, which I consider a faculty of mind, not only a practice, important practice. But anyway, so I diverge. But so getting back to transformation as distinct from change and being in the right question. So when you say, okay, well, if I'm going to put my attention on, I want to change this glass on my table, and now how do I change it? This is about, you know, when people want to change a reality. Well, what the idea of quantum thinking is, instead of trying to change the reality you have, you generate the reality you desire. So we could call this a transformation. What generates a transformation? Intent. And another way of doing it is seeing what question are you in? So I'm trying to think of a good, so going back to, let's just take this question. So a very simple example, Karen. Should we go to the Italian restaurant or should we go to the Chinese restaurant? Okay? This is what people do every day, right? And this isn't a good, it's not a great example, but I'll use it anyway. But if you think, well, how can this work for everyone? It really comes up under decisions that people make together, whether it's in business or whether it's as simple as what movie are we going to see or what are we going to have for dinner, that when you come from the intent of how can we have this work for everyone, not how can we make it work, which is the old world force and control, how can we have it work? Just staying in that question, invoking that in the quantum intelligent field, what will happen is possible solutions will arise from that infinite field of intelligence that could not arise when you are fixated on the either or, we're either going to do this or we're going to do that. It's like, how can we have this work for everyone? Oh, well, why don't we go here tonight, go to this place tomorrow night? Or why don't we, you know, go to this restaurant that has both? Or why don't we both decide on an entirely different type of food that we can both love? Because I don't like this kind and you don't like that kind. Okay, well, what do we both like? This seems very simple, but this is a profound question to hold, especially when you are making a business decision, making a life decision. How can we have it work for everyone? And in the quantum worldview, you know, we know, or I like to use analogously, that the scientists say they only see 4% of the visible universe. So the other 96 is dark matter, dark energy. You know, it's not visible to you. So if you just, I like to use 10% for simplicity, but if you only realize that whenever you create an intent, you're activating a field from which you're creating a probability wave field that you will attract through resonance, sympathetic resonance, many results, not one end result, many results consistent with that frequency of that probability wave field. And that's the power of intent that we have. So when you create an intent, even the intent in the form of that question, how can we have this work for everyone? What happens is the 90% that you cannot see at the outset of posing that question, or whatever question it is, that's a broad question, but there could be many, like we'll talk about that if you want. But when you pose that question, you're activating a certain sympathetic resonance. And you will begin to see, this is the principle, the distinction, allowing principle number 5 in the quantum think system, that allowing is also a faculty of mind. And it's a passive dynamic, I call it, of creation. So it's not just, oh, let's just see what shows up, or, okay, let go and let God. I mean, there is an aspect of that, or let the chips fall where they may. It's definitely not that. Quantum thinking is about conscious thinking, conscious living. So it means that you're consciously invoking a faculty of mind that we have called allowing. So you create your intent, and then you allow. And what happens when you allow is you look for what shows up consistent with your intent, because we're in a constant conversation, a co-creation, a collaboration with the field of intelligence that we are part and parcel of that surrounds us all the time. So when you do this in relationship with another person, then you have that power of that co-created intent. How can we have this work for everyone? And ideas and solutions and notions will arise that will surprise you. And it's, you know, this is a delightful, fun way to live, because we're truly tapping into that, you know, that magic that is us.
Hello, this is Karen. I'm back. For some of you who saw me get cut off, we're just going to resume where we take off and splice the show back in. And so we're going to call this part two. Diane's back in here with me, and we're going to end. We're going to begin where we ended. And Diane,
I am here, and I'm so happy to be back, Karen, and everyone.
Here we go. And I think
technology,
where
we love
off,
it. Hmm?
I know, and I faded out, was you were talking about tapping into the magic, and it was sort of the end of the discussion on chapter, I think, 5, allowing. So we're going to go back and do
yes.
it into chapter 6. And it's the beginning in one conversation, being in one conversation. And I was thinking that this one is the idea of, you're talking about Spock, but also the five senses.
The five senses. What was I saying about that?
Well, you know, it had to do with Spock. It's like being aware that your whole body, in essence, is an electrical unit.
Right, and that our whole body is. Well, first of all, you know, what I love about this particular distinction, being in one conversation, is that it's another octave, Karen, of the fundamental principle of holism, of holistic and holographic. So when you, this is where you start to see, oh, you mean if I'm starting to quantum think, if I'm starting to think from quantum principles, if I'm starting to actually live and think holistically and holographically, you start to see the wholeness in everything. And that includes a conversation. Whereas, for example, the old world industrial age worldview, which was a view really of parts and separation, you know, the machine, break it down into its constituent parts, how does it work in a cause and effect way, and then we can figure out how to predict and control. Well, when you map this on to how did this apply in conversation, and you're looking at that, you know, the one dimensionality of the physical, which is, of course, the dimension of the five senses. We know that everything extends into everything else. So, you know, that's sort of an old world view of the five senses, I realize, even as I'm saying it. But when you look at what is the nature of a conversation, because this is so important, we all say in our relationships what we want is quality relationships. What we want is great communication. And in fact, in nature, it is said that everything that gets accomplished through patterns of relationship. So when you look at a conversation as one whole, rather than, you know, I'm the speaker, you're the listener, and then we trade parts, then what happens is you continue to tap into the field, into the magic of infinite intelligence, which is the field. Because what happens is you imagine that we are many voices having one conversation. And that the conversation has it's like its own entity. And so we're kind of dancing in the communication. And we do sense, is going to get back to what you were referring to, Karen, is that we do have a sense of, you know, when something is arising within us, you could say when it's our time to speak, when it's our moment to continue and to unfold this dialogue that we're in. And so this is what, you know, I just wanted to, the reason that I start this chapter off in Do You Quantum Think with, remember in the Star Trek series, Mr. Spock would mind meld to communicate with someone who didn't speak the universal language. And the point that I was making in this is that their point, the Star Trek originators, is that they are careful to point out that a mind meld is not telepathy, but a shared consciousness. And that's really the idea of this being in one conversation, is that we're in a shared consciousness when we have an aligned intent, when we have an aligned vision. That could be a bigger conversation if we're creating something together, but just really even an ordinary conversation. And the other aspect of this that I like to point out, Karen, is that what happens is the listening is just as important as the speaking. So right now, we're the speakers in this show. And the audience, you know, I'm always, because of this distinction, being in one conversation, I'm always keenly aware right now of everyone listening. Now, because in the quantum world, we know that it goes beyond the limits of ordinary space-time. So we know that people are listening beyond this particular moment where you and I are recording the show. We know that, you know, people could be listening many times over, and it doesn't matter, and that it's everywhere. And this is one of the ways that our latest technology, which are born from these quantum principles, reflect ourselves back to us, because it's like we project into the, quote, external world, into that which appears to be objectively outside of us, that which is, hold one second, I'm having a throat thing, it must mean something. Anyway, we project that which is within us, and we put it out into the world. And this, you know, this unfolds, as the masters call it, the play of consciousness, this continuous evolving and unfolding. So when you look at the technology that we have that enabled us to to cut us off during the first part of the show, and also to have us get back and splice it together and put it all together, is that these technologies, computer science, all of it, is born of this. So now what we're conditioning ourselves to is to adapt ourselves to live into this in our everyday life. So this is one very simple way that we do it, being in one conversation, so that the presence of the listener, the listeners, is playing an equal creative, co-creative role in the one conversation. And this is, it's just immensely gratifying to know that as a listener, and whether you're listening or speaking, you're creating this conversation. We're creating it together. So when we create these distinctions right now during this show, we're all doing it together. We're bringing it into our awareness right now in this moment in such a way that these distinctions stay with us forever, whether you're reading them or whether you and I are discussing them. And this is
how
it works.
There's one part in the book that I thought was interesting in this chapter, too, because you bring it on in the other chapters as well. It builds on it, is listening from not knowing, because too often times, you know, we can be, think I already know that, and we rush into a conversation. But listening from not knowing, I think, is a gift of actually really listening and allowing the other person to be heard.
That's exactly right. And again, that's where you tap into the field, because,
right,
well, when you look at this, and in this way I say that a little bit differently in this distinction, which is to, well, listening from not knowing, that is very important, because you're listening as if you don't know that person. You're listening as if, even if you've been reading quantum mechanics for the last 10 years and spiritual wisdom, you're listening in this moment as if you've never heard it before, because the fact is this moment is new. Whenever you're listening to this conversation that we're in right now, this moment for you is new. So we do this as a conscious act. Now, in this distinction, being in one conversation, making it still another octave of awareness, which is to listen with your whole being. And one of the recreational, the practices that recreates the distinction in your life, I give people, Karen, is to listen to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which is approximately an hour and 20 minutes, without interruption. It's such a great practice. I invite everyone to do it. Without interruption and without having it be background music without doing anything else, and it's good to use headphones if you're doing it, where you, and the idea is that you give yourself an experience of what it means to give your whole self, I think this is what you were talking about, the five
yeah.
senses and beyond, where it's not just, you know, the old world view, which was, you know, limited to the five sensory. So we would have these things like active listening, you know, where there are different practices of, you know, like active listening where, you know, you're conscious that you're really trying to listen to what the other person's saying, but that's not this. Or listening where you can parrot back the words. Oh, I heard what you said. You parrot back. You know, I've been in certain, you know, counseling situation where that goes on, and it's all good. It's not as if that those two things aren't valuable. They are. But if you realize, as I'm asserting, that maybe listening isn't a skill. It's not a thing to do. It's an aspect of our being. Listening is an aspect of who we fundamentally are at the core of our being. So when you say, okay, well, how do I listen with my whole being? It's like you're turning yourself over to the conversation. In this case, you turn yourself over to the music and just experience it so that you have that experience through that practice, that if you're in a conversation, you turn yourself over to the conversation as if the person speaking is you. You know, we talk about we are one, unity consciousness. This is one way of actually living that. And you realize that this is where, when you are listening that way to another person, the person who's speaking can actually hear themselves, because we're always communicating through the invisible, energy-intelligent, connected field with each other. So when you're listening this way, the other person experiences it. It doesn't have to be said. Whereas if you're just sitting there waiting, you know, the old world kind of conditioning that we all have, where you're saying, okay, when is she going to be quiet so I can get my word in, right? This is what we all do. And so you don't have your 100% awareness with the other person, because you're in your, you know, okay, I'm ready to give my part of this. Now, when you begin to live this where it becomes natural, and it does become natural, you don't actually have to think about it. It just, the, you know, again, your message, your part of the conversation just arises and it just flows. And this is like literally being in flow, but and with other people.
Mm. Got it. So now we're doing pretty good. We're on to number 8. Transformation
okay.
of a decision from change, context. You said you had never gotten and done this on a show.
No, I haven't. Well, we're only 8 of 21. I don't know what we'll be able to do it. But transformation as distinct from change, you know, I wonder if I was touching on that a little bit in the part one of this show, because this is such an important distinction. And basically, what it is that when we want to create something new, when we want to generate, you know, some kind of new reality, I'm not talking about, you know, the big new reality of humanity, but that too, but just in an everyday, ordinary life, in your life, my life, whoever is listening and in this conversation with us. And, you know, you want to generate something new. Maybe you want to generate, you know, a new project or a new accomplishment or an amount of money that you've never made before or any of it. And you have your attention on the current, the existing reality. So what happens is, because of quantum mind and how it works, that what we focus on expands. And so where we have our attention and intent, that's what we're energizing. So we we may not be used to generating what we want rather than trying to change what we don't want. And this is what that distinction is. Transformation as distinct from change. And one of the ways that we do that is by being in one conversation. got that on my mind now, is by being in the right question. We were starting to talk about that.
Yeah.
And I think you have an experience of that yourself? I don't know whether you wanted to share something about it, but where, you know, just simple business things. For example, you could think, well, let's see, how many books, I'm talking about this because I'm looking at my book and I'm, you know, among other things, an author, saying, how many books do I want to sell every week? Or, you know, how am I going to sell X amount of books? And so you might be in that question. Now, anyone can adapt this to whatever you're working on. And so it would put my attention in a place where I don't think I would get the result that I wanted because it's to cause and effect. The quantum domain doesn't work that way, right? It's like if I take A, B, C, or actions 1 through 10, then I will be able to sell X amount of books. And there is reality. You know, there is validity to that. And you know, having been, I think, from the advertising world at one point, where the numbers do count. So we're not trading in, this is a good time to bring this up again, we're not trading in the old worldview for the new worldview. We're expanding upon it, and we're making the distinction in how it influences our thinking in, so that we're not limited by any point of view. And that's really what this is about, is that we understand how these ways of thinking, these assumptions that we make in life, have affected our thinking so that we take command of our own thinking, of our own relationship with our thoughts, with our thinking system, with what we hold in mind. And this is what this is really about. So if I shift it, if I just ask a different question, and a question is another form of intent, and sometimes we don't actually speak the question, Karen. It's just operating sort of in the background. We're always operating, you know, we could say in response to a question in the background. You know, how do I do this? How do I accomplish that? What do I want to do today? What do I want to do with the rest of my life? How do I live my purpose? Or whatever the question is, you know, what decision should I make now for my child or with my child? So that would be a there was a switching question right there. So it's like that. Instead of saying, well, how am I going to sell X number of books, I might be in a totally different question. For example, you know, what is the way that I love to connect to the people who will resonate with this message or who could resonate with this message, you know, depending on what audience you want to speak to. So now I have my attention in a different place, where, you know, I'm, instead of looking at how many books am I going to sell, I'm looking at what are all the different ways I can connect with people. So that's just a simple example, but that's an example of how a question will lead you to generate a whole different reality.
No,
does
I like
make
that.
Sense?
Totally. And then in chapter 9, I think this applies, aspects of knowing, the unawareness, the concept, the intuitive, and the participatory. I thought the participatory one was kind of interesting when I got to that. I said, oh, I get it. But I like the four distinctions.
Well, I consider this, you know, one of the most important, well, it's like this. I think I put the subtitle of this distinction, Get This One, Zap You're a Master. And I'll tell you why in a second, but I wanted to bring up that you skipped over 7. And I
if you want to go back to that one, go for it.
Well, you know, it's not that I want to go back, but I'm going to remember these are all interconnected. But there was something that I wanted to bring out about that 7 in with regard to, you know, what we've been talking about. And, you know, you brought it up and said, what is the number 7? You know, what's taboo to you? In between each chapter, it's not even in the table of contents. I don't know how I got away with this in with my publisher. But in between the chapters, I have what are called quantum think waves. And it's just like a page of, you know, exactly that. Here's something to think about. And it kind of leads into the next distinction. And so this one, it said, because I remember you were talking to me about this, it says, wait, don't read this if you think numerology is taboo. If you have fear of it,
yep,
or if you feel it's a subject you shouldn't address. Remember that?
Yep.
And the reason I wanted to bring it up, because it does lead to the distinction, perspective of all perspectives. I am going to go to the 8, but, that you know, because in simple terms, what that I have been discussing about this, about making this leap and learning to think beyond what the limits of our own mind are. This is an aspect of, you started this segment with tapping into the magic. So whatever comes up for us, it's such a great practice. I do it with myself because, you know, we have, for example, Karen, you may have agree with certain, you know, political leanings or not, whatever, quote, side you're on. You know, I like to be beyond the two-party system, but in any country, because it enables us to see the value in whatever is being presented and whoever is speaking. Because if we are really to live the wisdom of compassion and unconditional love, these great virtues that the great teachers, why we tap into their wisdom. Because we want to be able to live this in us. And it really, these little, simple little practices like noticing, oh my God, I don't like astrology. I don't like numerology. That sounds like the occult, you know, or whatever it is. Or I don't like that politician's, you know, way of thinking about something. And then being able to just notice it in yourself and be able to, as you said earlier, listen from not knowing. Let me listen to this person. What is the intent behind what they're saying? You know, before I came onto the show, just now before, I was standing out on our balcony, and I was looking out at the sea and the sky, and it's so beautiful. And I saw some people walking in the street, and I just got this feeling, like sweet souls. And I was like, is everyone a sweet soul? You know, are there really such a bad thing as bad people or even criminals or murderers or, you know, terrorists? And I do really hold, and this goes back to the transformation as distinct from change and what we're going to get to, the four aspects of knowing, that, you know, peel away all the layers of, for whatever reason, people are, you know, have adapted what we would call, you know, really not so good behaviors. And I think underneath that there really is a sweet soul. So you just think, wow, what if we really all held reality that way? What would happen in the outer world? Because as long as we hold limited beliefs, that's the reality we're holding in place, whether it's for ourselves or for the collective. Anyway, I'll get off the soapbox now, but I did have that thought.
I wanted to share it.
And so the four aspects of knowing, saying, I consider this very important because when we used to do a program that we called Quantum Think 21, and we would get to this, it was about in the middle of the program, and I would tell people, if you know, this is a demarcation. And here are the four distinctions. So the question is, how are you related to what you know? And I use this quote from Meditation Master, who says, you can only be what you are conscious of being. That is why I wanted to say what I just said about what if we held everybody as underneath it all, there really, we all are just sweet souls. And, you know, trying to, doing the best we can to manage ourselves on this planet. So when you look at this, you can only be what you are conscious of being. This, again, references what we hold within the feeling tone of our being, what we hold in our resonant field, and that we can only be what we're conscious of being because this is the reality that you're in the present moment. So when I say, how are you related to what you know? It means, what I mean by what you know is whatever you're holding in your awareness in the moment. And so it's good when you look at a goal you have this way, Karen, because here are the four aspects of knowing. The first aspect of knowing I call unawareness. And that means, you know, it's like you're flotsam and jetsam on the sea of life. You're just reactive mode, or what I consider, you know, you're in a least action pathway. Something comes up and, you know, you get into like a heated debate with someone and you kind of lose your presence. So this is what I mean by you're related in unawareness. Or if it's a goal you have and you said, oh, how are you doing on that goal you have? The person would say, what goal? You know, it's just like out of your awareness. Now, the paradox is once you become aware that you're related this way, you know, you're no longer in unawareness. The second aspect of knowing is being related conceptually. Now, this is the nature of the old world view, the industrial age world view conditioning of our thinking, because it is a separation of, you know, a world of parts and separation. So when you look at, you know, a concept, if you have a particular goal that you want to accomplish and you're related to it as a concept, it's separate from you. It's like that circumstance that you have to push or pull on to get it to happen. So that's the second aspect of knowing, conceptual knowing. Now, the problem with conceptual knowing is that it's no fun. It does help you to analyze data. It does help you to use ordinary logic. So it has its value. However, because you're not intimately, intricately connected to that goal, as you can only be what you are conscious of being, as you, then it's just, it exists like a good idea. Like, oh, yeah, I'd like to accomplish that. Oh, that's a good idea. But you're not in that, you know, coherent connection to it. The third aspect of knowing, it starts to move into that place of magic. Intuitive knowing. Intuitive knowing means that you in terms of a goal, you have a sense that this is going to happen, but you're still not 100% sure and in command of it. There's still a little bit of separation, but there's magic there because you're tapping in. It's like you're sensing, let's say you have a goal to, you know, take your business into a new expression of itself, and you're really feeling like it's going to happen, but you still have a little bit of uncertainty, but still you're following the promptings of your spirit, your soul, the signs that are intuitively around you. That's the third aspect of knowing. The fourth aspect of knowing is participatory, and what this means is exactly that word. That you are you know yourself as the seed, the blossom, and the fruit of that goal. This is where we know ourselves as quote, the creators of our reality. You know, we all say, you create your reality. Well, what does that mean? Well, you know, maybe did we create the moon? Maybe, maybe not. That's another conversation if we're all holographically projecting the whole thing of it. But just, I like to stay in ordinary everyday life where we're living most of the time, that we know we are at least, in the very least, creating our experience of reality. So what is creating our experience of reality? It's either being, something's always being created, that's nature of universe. It's either created from the patterns already in place, or what I call the default already existing, or we're creating it consciously with the awareness that we are. So participatory knowing, you have a goal and you know, it's like, you know it's already done, even though it hasn't fully unfolded in the physical domain. It's that, and, you know, I use something that is not a perfect metaphor, but if you have children and you are fortunate enough to live in the part of the world and have the kind of life that you have where you know your child is going to be fed today, it's like you're not thinking about, is my child going to eat today? Will they be have nutrients? It's in you. You're living that wisdom of it. So that's participatory knowing. And the purpose of this distinction is, you know, it's actually very useful because you can use it as a gauge. So when you have a result that you want, that you truly desire, you know, in your heart of hearts, souls of souls, that you can see, well, how am I related to this? Am I in, you know, conceptual about it? Am I intuitive? And just by virtue of the dynamic of the active dynamic that we've been born with, the ability to use our intent, you can have an intent to be in participatory knowing. And you can literally shift it because everything begins in consciousness. So that's really how you use that particular distinction.
Well, here's the question. It's a little complex,
but how was, did that
no,
come across?
No, I actually liked the book. The participatory one I actually really liked in the book because it was like you knew. I mean, sometimes I know I'm very much in the intuitive, and then I think I'm in the participatory, and then something doesn't quite go the way I think it should, then I think I'm falling back. So I that's how I relate to that one. Then it goes to chapter 10, which is in the center being, and the part that that I gravitated to understand was your distinction about the ego, because there's a lot of conversation that ego's not good. And then in your understanding, we all need a little of that. How else do you distinguish yourself?
Right. I have this thing that I don't like ego bashing, but I understand what people know. But, you know, if you say, and there are, you know, major spiritual teachers, so again, you know, a bit maverick in this way, but if you really think about it, we are, and this is an aspect of the quantum, living in the quantum world, it's a both-and world. So simultaneously, we are the transcendent self. You know, in what way are we one? We're that transcendent self, the all that is. We know that that is, you know, we're part and parcel. It's coming through us. We're connected there. That's what enables us to have any kind of a power to create. Where is it coming from? You know, because we are that transcendent awareness. So if we are that, you know, what some people think of this, you know, the spiritual aspect of ourselves, at the same time, we're the immanent self. The immanent means we are the roles that we play, this persona, this personality, you know, this part of, you know, we're the big I am, and we're also the roles we play on this beautiful stage of life. You know, I am a woman. I am an author. I am a speaker. You are, you know, a radio show host. You are a businesswoman. You are a spiritual teacher. So whatever, all those different roles, I am a mother, I am a daughter, that is And ask, that's what ego really is. So when we say ego identity, you know, the old world conditioning would have us want to destroy that, quote, identity with our ego. Yet, as you just said, we need that. That's how we participate in this amazing play of consciousness, in this
right.
evolution, right? That life mm-hmm. is, in this joy, in this everyday enjoyment that life is. So we need to embrace those roles that we play. And particularly, you know, in tuning into our worldly purpose, it's like you're born with certain talents and gifts, and you want to be able to make the best use of what it is that we have been endowed with, that maybe that our soul has chosen, depending on how you look at it, during this incarnation.
You know what? You had a quote in the book, and it struck at me. It was the one that the Gnostic Gospel had, and it said, if you don't do it, I'm not saying it right, but maybe you know the quote, but the effect was, if you're not doing what adheres you here to do, either will aliven you, and if you don't, it will kill you.
That's right.
Remember
this is a quote that's attributed to Jesus from the Gnostic Gospels. And the quote is, if you bring forth what is within you, what is within you will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you will destroy you. So, you know, without wanting to get, I was actually using that in the chapter, Whole Movement of Purpose, to show that we all do have a role here. We have a purpose here. Every single one of us belongs here. And I really feel that, you know, lately a lot of some clients have been coming to us because there's this sort of what they call a mental health issue that's growing. Again, I don't like labels. But this sense of, you know, how this plays out, and has nothing to do with, you know, how rich or famous you are, because we can see it in the Hollywood stars going into, you know, craziness and drug abuse and things like this, or we see it in these, you know, horrific shootings of young people really not in touch. So that's the extreme of it. But the fact is that we are here to give forth, to be in service that way to one another, to bring forth those gifts, and to be able to appreciate the ego. So that chapter, which is called Being Centered, and I'm saying, well, what are we centered in? We're centered in present moment awareness. When we say we're being, you know, like, wow, I really feel centered. I'm focused. I'm aware. My thinking is awakened in this moment. My consciousness is awakened in this moment. What are we centered in? That the big, you know, the transcendent I am. And at the same time, we can enjoy. And when you're in that state, which is our natural state, so it's just a matter, it's not attaining it. It's a question of what I'll call one of my great teachers, Swami Muktananda, who was the former head of the Siddha Yoga lineage, where he said, you don't have to try to attain the self, with a capital S. You do the practices, the spiritual practices, to clear away what's in the way of it. And what I'm, you know, putting forth there in that chapter, Karen, is to say, instead of trying to get rid of what you can't get rid of, which is your, you know, this beautiful persona, ego, personality with all the quirks and idiosyncrasies and seeing it in others, that let's just appreciate that in ourselves and especially in others, so that we, you know, the saying from the masters is, you know, to the master, life is entertainment, like watching a movie. So you love it, we're watching this play of consciousness. At the same time, we're not detached from it because we know we belong. And so you can be, when you're in that state of being centered, this is what enables us to be fully engaged. And that's the beautiful quantum paradox. We're fully engaged in the role we play without being limited by the identity, knowing ourselves as the transcendence.
Right. Well, here's a couple of things that come to mind when we're doing your, because this goes into some of the next ones, which is beyond time, multidimensional aspects of ourselves, and the part of entanglement. That's actually chapters 11, 12, and 13. But what comes to my mind is like you calling it the projector, being part of the kaleidoscope. But I have ever had a friend who had a near-death experience, and he had a choice to come back. He goes, you can, but if you don't, then the whole sequence of events will change, and that's not what everybody kind of agreed to, and I thought that was sort of interesting. And I think that goes back also to your passion of astrology, that we're part of a tapestry of a play to play out that partly teaches us, and we are multidimensional beings. So if you want to go, I think we can actually do touch points on 11, 12, and 13, because one is entanglement, one is beyond time, and one is our multidimensional being.
Yeah, okay, we'll go quickly now.
did I jump you on that one?
We're not going that quick, but, you know, we get into it, right? It takes us in the conversation. Well, the idea, you know, that's why I have the book, to have it where people can, I call it a friend for life, do you quantum think, where you can, you know, use it. And the idea is you're connecting to your own awareness. So I really appreciate that you're giving me.
I should probably say to the audience, this is not a small book. This book is what, 380 pages.
Yeah,
right? So it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's something where each chapter is really quite in depth. And so, you know, as your agent said, you're not doing the whole book, are you? No, well, I promise.
Right. It's like, really? And I was like, well, I can do 1 minute on it because life is holographic. But, you know, the idea is, right, it's that you, the intent in my writing of it is to enjoy it, number one, to be entertained by it in your own spirit, in your own mind and awareness, and to actually connect to this what is universal in all of us, and to put some phrasing around it so that what I call the art of distinguishing, a new worldview of learning, to bring something into your awareness in the present moment in such a way that you integrate it, because you're giving yourself something experiential. And that's, we just did chapter 17, The Art of Distinguishing, because that is the method.
Here's one thing I did.
What?
The time and no time in relationship to the coordinates of our universe. So I think that's kind of, you know, you had that sort of in the book. So it's a coordinates of being in the universe. And this verse is, it's a song. And so in a sense, it's holographic, it's musical, it's colorful. And it's right?
It's your current issue.
I didn't even think about that. When I do the magazine, it's like going on an exploration, and to see that color heals, that you can do color psychology and figure out where you are, the fact that you do color and sound and you heal. Every aspect of the spectrum is what we're made of, and there are so many ways we're taught that it is taboo, and yet it's everything.
It's everything.
Color is everything.
It's everything. All of the above. You know, and this is why when you say, what's, you know, living multidimensional, what does that really mean? And this is chapter, multidimensional universe, multidimensional
13.
Being. See, this is the difference, what you're bringing up, right, 13, between, and you just really touched on it, because I'm saying, well, where do you enter the hologram of life? You're never actually out of it. But it's like a, you know, if you think of it as a gem, a diamond with many facets, and that's what you're bringing up now, is that the multidimensionality. So I'm talking about your well-being, even though I'm not a health practitioner, so I don't make any claims about it. But just looking at how do you approach your own well-being? Well, the old worldview has conditioned us, again, around the physical. So, you know, we will go the least action pathway of the culture. It's not bad. We'll go straight to the physical. Sometimes we need to go straight to the physical because that is what is urgent in the moment and has to be taken care of. But so it's not, again, leaving that out, but it's looking at, well, wait a minute. We can heal with color because that has an effect. We can, this is what your magazine is about in that Matrix issue, which I'm so honored to be part of, where, you know, we can heal all these different ways, different energetic, scalar energy, electromagnetic energy. I mean, there, this is what it means, an infinite possibility. So, yes, it is. It's like...
But what I get really clear is that this is still, we're still talking what people don't get. We divide it, and it's still one thing.
That's right, because this is how I say it. There are distinctions, but no actual separations.
Yep.
This is why the art of distinguishing is important, because through distinguishing in language is how we bring something into existence for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and you know, in that old, the very famously quoted from Helen Keller, where she said she never had, that nothing existed for her until she had her first word, water. That when she got her first word, everything came into existence. There was nothing before that. And she, you know, that where you were bringing out, I think in our part one of the show, where you were talking about, you know, how the world and the whole idea of resonance that is in my resonance chapter, you know, that every tradition has said the world begins in sound. It's all sympathetic resonance. So, but that color at some part of the frequency becomes sound, right? Light becomes sound. So, yes, there are distinctions.
Here's a really interesting one. Color is imprinted in water, and water holds memory. And so that, to me, is like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. So we're basically, there's only three things, light, water, and particles, or you can call it air, and that's it. That makes literally everything. That's shocking.
Well, there's sound.
But the sound is a vibration that comes from the word, which is the vibration moving, which actually becomes light.
This is what I'm saying. One goes into, in when you go to, I guess, some, you know, I'm not a scientist, but certainly I study this all the time, that when you go into another part of the spectrum, right, it all, one becomes the other, becomes the other. So this is the real magic of life, is that we can tap into any of it, to what, you know, whatever we resonate with. And that goes to that, I think we're probably running at the end of our time, but that chapter 11, which is called Intuition and Non-Locality, this is what you were referring to, entanglement, quantum entanglement. And, you know, one of the points that I'm making in this distinction, intuition and non-locality, is that the most important, one of the most important really discoveries or, you know, knowledge that comes from the new science is that we live in this, what they call a non-local universe, and that our mind is non-local in nature, which means not located. It's not local. The mind is not synonymous with the brain. I'm sure most people listening, if not all, realize that by now. Not all scientists and all people do, because of the old worldview conditioning. That said, you know, consciousness comes from matter. Consciousness comes from the brain. Okay, now we look at, so we're looking at this, that mind, the nature of mind, it's non-temporal. It doesn't exist in, it exists beyond time, and non-spatial in the ordinary sense of everyday objects that we live in, that our egos, that our ego selves live in. And that this, so what does that mean to us? That's always my question throughout all of my work. Okay, why should I care? That's one of the questions. Is because that means our mind can go anywhere in this non-local field of intelligence. And it's not, I think of it this way, it's not even like it's going, you know, it's connecting. I look at it, Karen, as just connecting in, as you say, the coordinates, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What are we connecting into? And, of course, the perfect metaphor is the Internet and the computer and the data lines. Because if you think of the Internet, where does the Internet exist? It doesn't exist in ordinary space-time. It is the good, the bad, the ugly, and sublime of the infinite mind of humanity. You know, I mean, it's just infinite. There's no way. I don't think it can be ever measured in a moment. And so then it becomes a question of, okay, the computer, which we, or some similar device, computing device, that is able to transmit, you know, pick up on the intelligence, the mind. And, of course, the connectivity, the data lines or satellite or however the connectivity goes, Bluetooth, but whatever that is. So when we look at that, it's that comes back to us in terms of the reality that we really want for ourselves in the world. What are we going to choose to connect into? And when I... What I was going to say is the point that I like to make in that chapter is that we all love intuition. We all use our intuition all the time. We love this faculty of mind, the intuitive faculty. And what if we start to use it a little with a little bit more discipline? And the distinction that I borrow from Jay Krishnamurti, where he says there's the discipline that constrains, where you're like a, you know, working in a I don't even want to say a worker in a factory because I don't mean it to be demeaning, but, you know, where you're like that automatic thing, or a discipline that sets you free. So it's in that sense, when you start to use these faculties of mind consciously with the intent to have to use your intuition in a disciplined way, then what I'm calling it, the intuition is our human access into that non-local mind field. So all these faculties of mind work together. The meditative faculty, which has us be in that calm, centered, zero-point state where the mind is at rest. And it doesn't have to be sitting in the meditative practice. We can live in that state. And because it's a natural aspect of who we are. And so when you're in that state, that is when you, your intuitive faculty has the clearest connectivity, you know, or, you know, the reduction of static on the radio of your own being. And that's where we connect in. And when we're that clear, being centered, then that's where, oh, we can use the faculty of intent. Then we can use the faculty of intent with even greater versatility, greater, you know, adroitness. You know, we just become facile. And this is what it's all about. It's like, you know, I know you love to use that term of tapping into the magic. That's how I think of it. It's like, wow, this really is a magical universe. It's not fake. It is valid. It's scientifically proven in every which way, even though the public consciousness is still in the, you know, becoming exposed to it, becoming aware of it. And isn't this exciting, Karen? It's like we get to use these faculties when we have them in our awareness.
Well, when you're talking about why I do science to sage, and I'm learning all the time, and this is in your chapter 19 and 16, it's the power of this. It says Brahm calls matter frozen light. And here you have this other lady's quote, every bone in your body is vibrating, every tendon is piezoelectric, which people probably won't know what that means. We can explain. Our body is a walking crystal. We are stored electromagnetic energy. We can receive, we can transmit, and we can store electromagnetic energy. We are literally walking crystals. And so when we look at what water is, a lot of people are coming up to the fact that water is a liquid crystal. And what makes water is basically hydrogen and oxygen, which is fire and light. So when we look at who and how we are on this resonant field, that's exactly what we're being. So I love that part of your book because that makes us the conscious creator. That gives us the power. But remind you, we're living in a much more dense field down in this dimension, but that doesn't mean we don't move matter. And that's also how the magic and the miracles happen.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And by the way, I want to give attribution to that where I learned it, and it's from Dr. Norman Shealy. So people might be familiar, you know, he's like one of the brilliant pioneering consciousnesses on this planet. Anyway, yes, I love the way that you just said that. And, you know, I know that you had a school. I don't know if you still do.
No, I don't anymore.
You know,
but that was my
passion
for creating educational.
Yeah, and, you know, this is, you know, I think of this too, and of course a lot of people say it to me, you know, this should be in the schools. I just got a letter from somebody yesterday. I want this to be, you know, for every school. And because all what we're talking about, and I know some people who have come to me by way of having read my book, and people will write to me and call me, and, you know, young mothers, and they're starting to, you know, this is their expanded worldview. So
right.
This becomes a very natural way of relating to the children. You know, of course, we know then there's this other aspect where people are saying the children coming in now are coming with a higher frequency consciousness anyway, or the indigo, the crystal children. But even again, even if we don't know, you know, all the terminologies and everything, it's still, shouldn't we be bringing children
up? The pleasure. No, this is when I actually did the school, and at the end of the day, this is what that's why I do the magazine, but the kids at the school that I did got all of this. They got the geometry, they got the underpinning, they got space shape, they got cymatics, they got it all. And I can tell you, these kids thrived on it. And it's knowing that you are the creator and part of the creation. And I think that's an essential part of any education that any one of us should have. So, yeah, no, that is why I've continued to do what I do. And my final goal would be to create something that would bring all these great scientists together into a university of sorts so we could have this. So that would be...
I've always had that vision. I've had that vision of education, too, because I think we have this technology. We know who... Obviously not familiar with every single university, college, professor, but who there could be many, there are, you know, everyone has their own genius, or high school or teachers, whatever, but that we have the technology to have the, let's call them the pioneers in a certain field, to be able to literally broadcast their teaching across the world, like to every student simultaneously. So, you know, I see that, you know, the evolution of the whole educational system, and then where other educators are, you know, facilitating with that knowledge. But I don't know whether you could see that, but I've always had that.
No, I already have. I've seen it in my mind's eye. And the beautiful thing about when I do the magazine, I do host The Leading Edge. And having read your book, there's not one of them that I don't have in the magazine, and not one that I don't have a phone number to. So as far as that concerns, I'm tapped in, and I think it would be great. All we just need is to have a little bit of funding to create the studio to actually start bringing it forward. And so it's easy enough to do.
I am right there aligned with you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know what? The other thing is I have done it. I have curriculum that I've done for all the little kids for grade 1 to 9, and they've all had this stuff. So it's not like I don't have it at the grasp of me. I do. So I think maybe that's the next
wonderful
leap I do.
It really
so,
is
anyway,
so important.
Enough of me. But I think where we're both at, I could, because your book just references everything from the cymatics to the geometry to the, you know, the wooden books, Rupert Sheldrake, all of these things and people.
I purposely put those in because I want to introduce, you know, I have a passion about the end of the Great Divide, that there's one, you know, we're all tapped into this, the power that we have to create. We all learn the faculties of mind so that we know how to use them properly. We all can break free of automatic conditioning in our thinking.
Yep.
So as you think, so you become, so that we're at choice in the way that we're thinking and the way we're generating, using the faculties of mind and knowing these principles. And I put in the references to all those people, just, you know, touching on it, because I know that, you know, and my husband, who's my partner, Alan Collins, and I have worked with people, we would say, you know, in the, quote, mainstream culture, in major corporations, in government agencies, to the general public. So it may not be like people who are saying, oh, you know, I want to evolve my consciousness. But because, and you've noticed this with the kids, and we did a program with some high school at-risk kids, too, where because this is what is universal wisdom within each one of us,
mm-hmm.
when it's articulated in such a way that it's sparked, it's ignited, it is, you want to use the word awakened, it's awakened when someone can bring this into our awareness. So what I made all those references, first of all, because I'm completely grateful to all those people and the work that they're doing and appreciate it and have taught me a lot, that people will be aware of them.
Right.
That's really why I did it, is to acknowledge them, to acknowledge their work, but also to be aware of them. But I didn't get too much into it because I didn't want my book to be academic or conceptual.
Mm. Right.
I wanted it to be a living, experiential moment of reading, and that's really the idea of GE Quantum Things. So, yeah, they're in there. And
but here's the beautiful thing I think. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it, is that,
okay.
That for any of us, they're – so that is wow, really? Let me explore that person's work. Let me explore that person's work. And that's the idea, is that whatever you resonate with, you can go more deeply into that.
Yeah. And you know what? The ending of the book that you have, and I think this is the question, that how do we get there, is the whole notion of when you actually understand it, and you get to the place where you're participating and you realize it's within the flow, if you are becoming the painter of your own canvas, that there is a freedom and there are choices. And that doesn't mean that you don't have bumps and ups and downs in the road, because there is that ride and there is the wave. But at any point in time, you can choose to I love it in your book. Make the intent. Ask a different question, and there be self-empowered to know that you are moving the matrix. And I love the part in the book that talks about the flux. It's always in flux, nothing. And I think that's the part about being in the moment, because in the moment when you can truly, like you say, listen for something new, that's such a gift. And number two, you might just get shocked.
Yes, because that's where the you know, when you talk about the magic, the surprise comes. Mm. So you were speaking about earlier about how there is some, you know, it's a very, because in college I was a philosophy major. Oh, I had double major actually, psychology and philosophy. But, you know, one of the things, you're a classic, you know, age-old philosophical debate, you know, free will and determinism. And so there are, you know, when you get more, become more aware of the mystical, of the sacred aspect of life, of the soulful aspect of life, where you realize that there are tendencies. So when you look at the soul blueprint that is an astrology chart, in Western astrology is the one that I study, that you realize you could have, well, as one of my teachers used to say it in a cute way, you know, you'd be born with the ability to wield a knife. Well, you could become, you know, the murderer, the butcher, the surgeon, or the sculptor, or any other number of things. But it's something like that. And that's where what you're talking about, we have the freedom to choose. And I would add, when we're aware enough to choose, when we are not in the least action pathway of whatever set of beliefs that we, I'm not saying we should give up our beliefs, but I'm saying if we're talking about what does it mean to live consciously, is to be at choice in your beliefs, to be at choice in how are you going to wield those talents and gifts that you've been born with. Because there we do have proclivities, and we do have this enormous, you know, sense of possibility of what's happening. So it really is, you know, I'm writing it to inspire myself, to inspire all of us to know that just because, you know, the world has been the way it has been, and even in, you know, we know there's always been a handful of the self-realized beings, the masters we call them, who were not taking part in, you know, the ill-advised, destructive kind of, quote, evil kind of behaviors, but that do we have to be stuck in the good and evil story? Can we go on to a new story for humanity? And it looks to me, in a universe that is of its essence creative, of its essence energy in flux, informed by intelligence, where we as human beings are the focal point of the consciousness, in a sense, even though we know everything communicates with everything else. Everything is its own kind of intelligence entity, that we really do have the power to imagine, to envision what now does not exist that we know could work for everyone, for a greater life for everyone.
Wouldn't that be lovely? Sometimes
yeah.
When I turn on the news, my mom is, and it drives me crazy. I mean, it's not like I don't want to be informed, but sometimes it's like all they do is the sad part. And I know that there's a...
Well, those are just beliefs, action pathways.
Wonderful things going on. Mm-hmm, exactly.
Right,
oh.
Because the media has a least action pathway. You know this, having been in media. Mm. right? If it bleeds, it leaves, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just these stuck points. But as we all hold this greater awareness, these things are, you know, quantum leaps can and will, I'm saying, abound. We can have these quantum leaps, you know, where we start to generate a new narrative in the media. We start to generate and I like to say integrate, or as I say, kidding around, I watch a lot of spy movies, infiltrate the culture with consciousness, not to say, oh, they're not, that's what I mean by living the wisdom, as where I know we're coming to the close of the show. It means actually living the wisdom that we're not saying, you know, they don't know and we do, you know, we're the good guys, we're the conscious people and the other people aren't. No, we're all in this together, as Buckminster Fuller, I quoted from him too. You know,
I remember that.
Planet Earth, it's going to be all of us or none of us.
Yeah.
And when we start to hold it that way, it's really, you know, it's exciting. And it's really, it's so inspiring, as you say. All these good things are going on simultaneously. Maybe they're not so highly visible at the moment. But it's a question of integrating wisdom, awakened awareness, thinking that goes beyond the current limits, to put it, you know, from my perspective, into the world that we share.
True. And you know what I have to say to everybody? We may have not, I haven't basically said chapter 1, 2, 3, and we didn't get to 21, but I think we did cover all the principles.
Yes, we did.
We did.
Yes, we did. Remember, life is holographic.
I'm looking at him going, I have to say, we didn't, but because I think in a lot of ways we ebbed and forth between different things, and I think we did get all the touch points.
We covered a lot, and it's holographic, right? The whole of it is contained in every smaller aspect of itself, as the scientists say, albeit a fuzzier addition, you know, when you cut a hologram negative. Albeit a fuzzier version, but it's all there. It's always all there.
You know what? Here's what I'm going to kind of end the show with, because I think this is like a metaphor that's showing up for me as I'm doing my own book. Water literally is the field. It is the solution that we swim in. It is crystalline in structure. It is where, at any moment, we can have our miracles and we can change our world. It just could be that quick, because it. Water, clean water, not water that's been rechanged with all the chemicals, where we've rechanged the structure. But I think God has, the field has an infinite, beautiful structure that just by loving it, it actually changes and glows. I've seen that with pictures. I know you've mentioned in your book Konstantin Korsakov, and with his GDV device, and it shows the you can actually see a leaf when you actually send it love. It literally glows. And don't we as humans do the same thing? I think
absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, the essence of all of life, which in its finest moment when it does glow, is love. And I think that's, and I think what you're asking us to do is to be in conversation where we can actually be at the heart with one another and really listen. And I think that's when, you know, when I did work with the kids, that's the one thing they did want. They wanted to be seen and heard. And I think at the end of the day, that's it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think you and I have to finish that conversation in private, though.
I know. But
I think
that was beautifully
that.
Said. I would love to. I'm very, very interested in that. And I just want to thank you so much, Karen, for the honor of being your guest on the show, and for the enjoyment and fun of it, and of being with everyone in this one conversation, which is continuously reverberating out, right, and unfolding. Yeah.
And infrared, if you didn't know that. It was actually interesting. The guy from the Cymoscope who does cymatics in water says, you know, when you speak, it literally goes out infrared, infinite. Everywhere, it never dies. Your voice sound you know, stops about a mile away, he says, but the infrared of it goes on infinitely.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
I know. The more I learn this stuff and I realize, wow, I know, it's great. And therefore it is said, the spirit moves on the water and I am light. And there you go. And with that, I'm going to say thank you very much to the Awakening Zone for hosting Science to Sage. Also, I thank you for everybody who will come back and listen, because this is part one and part two and now connected. And with that, I want to say thank you to everybody and good night to the AZ Awakening Zone. There we go.
You've been listening to the Awakening Zone Radio Network, offering insights and inspiration for our evolving consciousness.